Answering your tough financial questions for the past 21 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters with co-hosts Scott Hanson and Pat McLean. Would you like an opinion on a financial matter you're dealing with? Whether it is about retirement, investments, taxes, or 401ks, Scott Hanson and Pat McLean would like to help you by answering your call. To join Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-H-A-N-S-O-N.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you're with us today, the middle of October. Boy, it's October. Both October is kind of known as a volatile time for the stock market.
Yes.
And we've skipped that. Actually, if you look the last few years, we've kind of skipped that often October.
It's been a while.
And we didn't even talk about it leading up into October here at Hanson McLean's Money Matters, but we certainly saw last week some volatility pop back into the markets.
The numbers were large. The percentages on a historical basis weren't that bad.
No. So we'll talk a little bit about this and kind of what it means to you as someone investing or for retirement, because it's always surprising. I don't know if it's surprising. It is surprising. When we have a period like this, how many people that I, in my, not at work and not clients, I'm talking about just people I run into, want to have a conversation about the markets and, you know, what should we do, anything different?
They'll come up to you in public and say, hey, Scott, because they know you're an investment advisor and want to discuss the markets with you?
Yes, this week I had people at the gym, multiple people at the gym.
That's why I don't go to the gym. Just flat out.
No, literally, multiple people at the gym asking me, why is the market going? Why is the market going down? Hey, what do you think about this? And it's just, you could flip on the news and you're going to get 10 different stories of why the market went down. Primary thing is the Fed raising interest rates. The fact is, the Fed started raising interest rates almost 2 years ago.
The president came out and was kind of a little bit critical about the Fed. This environment that we've been in the last 6 and 7 years is atypical, not typical.
With the market kind of quietly marching up.
Yeah, and with the interest rates so low, the short-term interest rates so low for so long, and even long-term interest rates this low, it's atypical. So they're trying to get back to normal. And the Federal Reserve is trying to get back to normal. It's not going to be an easy march getting back to normal. It's just not. There's going to be fits and starts. When they started talking about raising interest rates 5-6 years ago.
and QE2, yes. 3-4, how many QEs we had, and then buying back the bonds.
On the long bonds.
Yeah, their portfolio they had internally. Anyway, Hanson McLean, so we're going to talk a little bit about this morning and what it means to you as investors and kind of put some things in perspective. That is our objective. And, of course, we'll take some phone calls. And if you'd like to be part of the program, it could be regarding anything and doesn't have to be around the markets at all. So some financial planning issue. Our contact number to join us is 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-242-6766. Now, I think the first thing is to address why people own stocks in the first place, right?
Yes.
Because, you know, let's say you're approaching retirement, maybe you're 401k, you've had limited options, you've had some in stocks, now you're getting to retirement, trying to figure out what's the best strategy. The fact is, over the long term, what has produced the highest return for investors has been when investors own something that produces some profit.
And it is primarily stocks, but not a stock or three stocks or 12 stocks or even 20 stocks.
Well, before that, I can go back further. It might be owning your dry cleaners, owning the local 7-Eleven, owning whatever. Or owning public companies and doing that through the stock market, right?
Yes.
Owning public companies.
Yes.
And so if you look at, say, a broad index, we could look at either the Dow Jones Industrials, which is 30 companies, or the S&P 500, which is 500 companies, and look at some perspective. Think about this, Pat. So you know all these numbers.
Okay, well, refresh me.
Since 1926, I was just doing some research. This is according to Investopedia. Since 1926, the S&P 500, the broad stock market, has returned on average, over the long that long period of time, approximately 10% a year.
Including dividends.
Yes, 10% a year.
Including dividends.
Yes. But not every year does it.
Well, that'd be amazing if it did.
But sometimes people start to assume that's the case. In fact, if we look at the S&P 500, this is some data according to Deutsche Bank from 1945 to 2013. So if we look at this period of time, if you look at untypical days, the average day, right?
Okay.
Trading day. We saw this week, some swings. The average day, the stock market's 53% of the time it's up, 47% of the time it's down.
Those are actually pretty good odds.
Oh, absolutely. You take those
odds. Yeah. If you went to any other gambling place that had odds like that without
inside
information.
Coin tops is 50-50. So
yes.
If you look at months, 58% of months, the market's up.
Okay.
Years, 72% of years are up. But think about this, 28% of years are down. So if you own any, if you own some stocks or an index fund, one would expect maybe one out of 4 years, you're going to have a decline in your in the stock value.
The problem is, you don't know where those years are going to lie. You don't know if they're subsequent years or if they follow 4, 5, 3, 2, 1 good years. You just have no way of knowing.
Correct.
And the reason you don't know when...
Because nobody does.
And the reason is because it's driven by emotion, crowds. That's why.
Short-term prices, there's no question.
It, as we, it was evidenced that by the fact of that one... If you look at one day, the percentage of times that you made or lost money.
Long-term, you need a growing economy and profits in a company. That's long-term, it'll be driven by that. Short-term, it's driven by anyone's guess, which is why we look at a time like this. S&P 500 companies are coming out with great profit numbers. The economy is growing. Inflation's still in check. But yeah, why did the market go? Why did the market have the week like it did?
No one really knows.
But
you can
point back to it. It's emotion.
You can point back to it and kind of create theories.
Now, if you look over the last 9.5 years since the Great Recession.
Which has been.
We have not had a 20% correction. A 20% correction historically has happened about every 3.5 years. Listen, get this. A 20% decline in the stock market has happened about every 3.5 years and has lasted about a year in length before it starts popping back up.
Which falls into that 1 out of 4 years.
And a 10% correction, which we've only had, I think, one since that period of time, 10% correction has, according to Deutsche Bank, since 1945, this occurs every 357 days, so approximately once a year, and lasts about 71 days. So when things like this happen, this is normal. Just as normal as if you live in the mountains and snow arrives at wintertime.
And some years it doesn't, but most years it does.
Right, and it's kind of like we've had a drought.
Well, let's not use that term. We've had a boom market for a long period of time, and now we have no idea whether we're going to go into a drought or not.
We have no idea if this will last.
But the reason we like exchange-traded funds and mutual funds and broadly diversified portfolios is to get rid of some of the risk of individual company stock risk in the portfolios.
Yes, and further, the vast majority of clients at Hanson McLean, as most retirees, not everything's in stocks. And the stuff that are in stocks are designed for the long term. They're not money that needs to be tapped in the next quarter, year, 5 years even.
So I was having a conversation with a gentleman the other day. He said, well, if the market's down a lot, how am I going to get my income? Well, the stocks still deliver dividends. And
hopefully not everything's not in stock.
And your portfolio, this particular person, had half in bonds and cash and other alternatives, liquid alternatives, and half in equities. And I said, over the bad periods of time when the market's not doing well, we will sell some of the bonds in order to deliver the income.
Which is exactly what we did in the Great Recession. And think about this. Think about the Great Recession where it was a nasty time. But those that chose to hold their stock or maybe increase their exposure, like many of our clients did.
Yes.
Did very well. Those that bailed out.
Didn't do.
How many people you talk to that's like, when do we get back in?
Yeah, and when do you get back in?
You get out, when do you get back in?
Yeah.
much better. Your odds of success are much better if you have a broadly diversified portfolio, one that's designed that where it's always uncomfortable, but not to the point where it drives you nuts, but it's set up so that if you need some income in the next 3, 4, 5 years, you can draw upon other assets and don't have to look towards the stock.
And you understand the potential downside in the portfolio. There are tools now that help you determine how much risk you should take and the potential downside in your portfolio.
Yeah. So let's go to the calls here. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number. 1-888-2-HANSON. And we are in Pleasanton, California, talking with Chris. Chris, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah. Hi, Chris.
I'll be getting a lump sum of money around $60,000. I want to put it in some fixed, you know, instruments to invest in, no risk, and, you know, spend it over the next 2 or 3 years. And wondered what'd be some good options for that.
The first thing is forget about any real return on it. I mean, and I'm on totally serious here because, you know, $60,000 is a good size chunk of money, but if it's money that's going to be spent in the next 2 or 3 years. It needs to be invested in something that we have a high certainty that the money's available to us
and what,
when we go to spend it.
Chris, so it's $60,000. What are you going to buy with it in the next 2 to 3 years?
It'll just support cash flow.
Got it.
And then after that?
Well, I mean, there's other, this is, I'm just thinking short term for this amount of money. I've got other assets to cover other things.
Got it. I'd buy 1, 2, and 3 year treasuries.
I don't know what kind of rate you're going to get with a $20,000 purchase on a treasury. You might be better off just in a
bank CD.
In a money market or an ultra short term bond fund.
So go to bankrate.com.
That might be your best bet.
Go to bankrate.com and see who the highest FDIC insured bank is and just put it in the money market. That way it's 100% liquid. There's no principal fluctuation whatsoever. And you're going to...
You're going to have the same kind of rate.
Pretty similar to what you get in a treasury.
Maybe better than a money market account. Better than a...
A treasury or an ultra-short bond.
Yeah, probably so.
Yeah, so go to bankrate.com and look at high-yield FDIC money market accounts.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Can I ask you another question?
Yes.
Sure. By the way... My son, my freshman in college asked me the same question about 3 years ago. He asked 3 months ago, like, hey, Dad, I got some money in savings and I'm not happy with the returns at the bank. What should I do with it?
He said, use it for your college tuition because you now I learned this. I'm not paying it for as much.
That's what I said. So anyway, he went to bankrate.com and did the research and ended up at one of the online banks. Okay, what was the second question?
Nice. So there's also some cash sitting around in an IRA. So I'd like to put that in a fixed income instrument.
How old are you, Chris?
64.
Okay. And when do you plan on spending the money in the IRA?
That can take a little bit longer. That's longer term.
How much money is there?
There's like 80,000 there just in the cash portion.
How long has it been in cash?
Too long.
For, like forever? Or?
Well, what are the other positions in there?
I've got stocks and some other bonds.
Well, so
mutual funds.
So maybe cash is the appropriate place. I mean,
how big is the account, the total amount in the IRA?
About 400.
Okay, so you're 20% cash position in there right now.
Yeah.
So I would reallocate it to a proper allocation and leave in about 2 or 3% in cash.
I would do the same.
Right.
Assuming the rest of the portfolio is allocated correctly, then I would just take those dollars and allocate it amongst the rest of the portfolio.
So for the fixed income portion, what would be good options for that?
Got it. And what percentage of the portfolio is in fixed income?
So here's our challenge. I'll be real frank with you. So you're like, I feel like you're asking for like this product answer, and we don't believe they exist. So, for example, fixed income, for a fixed income portfolio that we would have for our clients, they'll have lots of different types of fixed income in there. They'll have some treasuries in there. They'll have some corporates in there. They'll have some international fixed income in there. If it's a taxable account, there might be some tax-frees, probably some tax-frees outside of California to minimize the risk there. So it's a variety of different fixed income tools.
So what percentage of your portfolio is in fixed income?
Well, probably here, like 25 to 30%, but I want to jack it up a lot more because I'm obviously getting closer to retirement.
So the 25 to 30%, so you have, from what you just told me, is you've got cash and equities and no other bond positions. Is that, does that sound about right?
Well, it'd be bond funds, part of the fixed, and then the, you know, more mutual funds, stocks.
Got it. So at 64 years of age, not knowing your risk tolerance, I don't think you should have less than 50% of it in equities at all. Yep. I think you should have at least 50% in equities, and I think you should actually, as Scott said, I would hold, I wouldn't go super long on the bond, but I certainly certainly would have a well-diversified of U.S. government, corporate, and international bond positions in the portfolio, and I wouldn't keep any
more.
In
this market, we got to be concerned with not only the yield curve, right, so being too far out there, but also credit quality. If we look at the amount of investment grade, double B investment grade bonds out there, it's about double what it was 5 years ago.
So there's a lot of money. Scott?
It's one notch above junk bonds.
And why is that, that there's so much of it out there right now?
It's the same thing that happened 10 years ago in the housing. The credit agencies, they go to them, they say, we need an investment grade rating on this. And like, okay, how much you're a good client, you pay for the rating, so here's the rating you need.
And the higher the rating, the lower the
cost. I don't mean I'm cynical, but that's...
The higher the rating, the lower the cost of money.
Yeah, so there is... So you need to be just a little careful, because the risk in today's market is a rising interest rate environment, which can put downward pressure on a price, and credit quality. Because if at some point in time we have a slowdown, we can...
When we have a slowdown.
Thank you. We can see a deterioration in in some of those bonds, and there might be some companies that suddenly have trouble repaying. And then we think, oh, that extra yield I was receiving by going a little more investment down the investment curve,
it wasn't worth the risk.
Yeah, now I took a loss on it, and I would have been better off.
The risk premium wasn't there. So in that portfolio, you want to hold all of those. You want to pay attention to the length of the bond, the average maturity of the bond, as well as the credit quality. But I disagree with Scott. I'd hold up to 10% in cash. Scott said 3 or 4, but
we don't have 10% of our clients.
I understand that, but he's got an affinity for cash. You're saying that I should just fight that.
Well, the reality, Chris, from what you stated so far, I think you would be well served by having a quality advisor helping you make some of these asset allocation decisions. Through a rational process.
That's because I have no idea what your risk tolerance is.
So. Anyway, appreciate the call. Hope that was somewhat helpful anyway. thanks for joining us today, Chris. To be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-242-6766.
You know, Scott, let's touch on that for a minute. It is, judging someone's risk tolerance is... you can't do it over a phone. We need to know
so we can give a textbook answer. But one thing I realized when I got out of school and started doing this, first few years it was a lot of textbooks type stuff, and until suddenly you realize you got people involved.
Yeah,
and they don't always make rational decisions. As humans, we don't always make rational decisions, and there's a lot of behavioral finance stuff on that. And then you realize that sometimes you need to put some parameters in place
in order to play, in order to understand what that tolerance is. But I talked to a gentleman today that was highly experienced, and he said to me, you know, Pat, I totally messed up. He said, over the last 7-8 years of this recovery, I had way too much money in cash.
Well, it's easy to say that now. Of course he'd say that now. Who wouldn't say that? Of course he'd think that now.
Well, I didn't try to make him feel bad. I said to him, well, I guess it's your money. You can do whatever you want. As he was standing out in front of his really nice house.
So it didn't impact his lifestyle.
It didn't impact his lifestyle.
It just would have been nice had he had a little more return than he had. That's all.
Yes. But so it did not impact. Difference. No, it made no difference in his lifestyle.
Well, then what's the... Anyway. And let's continue with calls in Sacramento. Eric, you're with Hanson McLean.
Good morning.
Hi, Eric.
I have a question for you. It's pertaining to a 401k that I currently have in with the company that I work for.
Okay.
excuse me. So the question is, the company, well, just a little background. The company just recently went over to an ESOP, which now makes me theoretically part owner in the company.
Yes.
It's pretty widespread, but it's a good thing.
No kidding. But, it's a great thing. Can be a great thing.
Yeah.
Well, there's no downside.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. But the absence of a great thing isn't failure either. So
that's correct.
Right. So the downside to that is that the company has stopped contributing to the 401k.
All right. Stopped a match or a safe harbor. Correct.
That's correct. A match. Yes.
Okay.
So my question is, should I continue? I mean, the 401k is still intact. And employees who are part of it can continue to contribute. So I can continue to contribute to the 401k. So would you guys, I mean, would you recommend me doing that or moving it?
I think there's the 401k is an excellent retirement saving vehicle for two primary reasons. One is the fact that it's yanked out of your paycheck before you have a chance to spend it, right? That's probably the biggest benefit for most Americans, because it's hard to save once the money's in the checking account and there's competing needs.
It develops a discipline that many people don't have.
Yes. And secondly is the tax benefits.
So you get a tax deduction, it grows tax deferred, and it comes out taxable unless you have a Roth option, which we can discuss that at a different date or after this answer. This question. But there's no reason in the world you wouldn't put money in it. The match was a bonus. The employer putting the money in was an absolute bonus for them to do that. There are many 401ks out there that don't match or have no safe harbor, which is just a contribution. But I get the employer's view of, if we're doing an ESOP, which is, for the rest of the listeners, it's an employee stock ownership plan. It's where management owners of a company will slowly sell some part or all of a company to its employees. And that's a great benefit. There's a great psychological benefit. There's a great financial benefit. There's a great benefit.
We have a number of clients that retired from firms with ESOP plans that did very well.
Extremely well. So you should continue your contribution to the 401k. And in fact, you should, if you're not at the maximum, you should push it to the maximum.
I'm not. Yeah, I need to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And the only other thing that you could, consider doing, depending upon your income, is doing a Roth IRA contribution as well. Or maybe a combination of the two, but that depends on what your taxable situation looks like. But for most people, the 401k is by far the largest saving vehicle that they use for retirement. And I would continue to make those contributions.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I planned on doing that. I just wasn't sure if it would be beneficial to
the challenge. The challenge you have, if you don't, let's say you're a highly disciplined saver, and some people are, you can say, well, instead of participating in the 401k, I'll participate in a Roth IRA, which that may be a good option for you. The primary factor is that the 401k is sucked out before you have a chance to spend it. That's what we really like about it.
And it's easy.
I haven't come across too many people that have so much money in their retirement plans at retirement that it's a real problem for them. They might have required minimum distribution issues at age 7.5, but the percentage of people that end up with too much money in their retirement accounts is so small compared to the percentage of people that don't have enough money for retirement.
Fair enough.
By far.
Yes. Yes. So you're not going to hurt yourself. Yeah. All righty. Appreciate the call.
That's good.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah. And there's some, Pat, I was looking, there are a couple bills in that had been kicked around in Congress that someone was saying one of them is going to pass within the next 12 months that'll have some changes to some of the 401ks and required minimum distributions. One is the stretch IRA. They're trying to kill that for beneficiaries.
To make it a taxable event soon after death.
5 years. But it's making it crazy because there's bills out there, some that have, if the dollar amount is a certain size, then it's one thing. And also required minimum distributions, accounts less than 50,000 don't have required minimum distributions. Another bill that accounts less than 100,000.
You know, but
I'm like, you're going to make this so complicated for everybody.
But the reality of the situation is if they, it's all theoretical until you actually are in a practical world in which we live in, where most of the beneficiaries spend the money as quickly as possible anyway.
That's fair.
Right? So the Congress could be pushing all this stuff through, thinking about all this, but eight out of 10, wouldn't you say? 7 out of 10? It's spent within
five years. 5 years anyway, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the rest of it, the rest of it's theoretical. When you live in the practical world in which we live in, which is what we counsel with clients all the time, we say, well, this is what they want for their children. And we're like, well, that's what you want. But when you're not here, unless there's, you know, guidelines around that, you know, they're going to do whatever they want.
Oh, yeah. 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Want more of Hanson McLean's Money Matters? Visit HansonMcLean.com/radio to get the Money Matters podcast.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you're sticking around for the second hour of Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
If you'd like to join the show, it's 888-2-HANSON. That's 888-242-6766 for financial questions.
So this week, I attended a luncheon with 9 other colleagues of Hanson McLean.
By the way, thank you for that.
What do you mean?
Well, I went last year and you didn't, and...
So Pat, when Pat goes to something like a luncheon or dinner, he rarely stays the entire time. I was at a conference with him a couple weeks ago. Were you there at the start of the conference?
Yes,
you
but
were?
Only like they had that reception. I was there for about 45 minutes. That's, I went okay. to my room.
He never. I mean, he's like he can't be the. The whole thing is just. I think it's your ADD or whatever. So.
I don't like it.
And it's all, anyway, we were, so I went to this luncheon with the Sacramento Business Journal had a,
which is where our corporate headquarters is located.
Sacramento. We, our employees had voted us as best place to work for a medium-sized company.
Thanks to them. Thanks so, for the,
I know.
They made it. They're the ones that make the company, not just you and I.
So we were there, as part of being honored as best place to work. And there were other companies there. They had a category for called micro. And I thought, I wonder if you have a different name besides micro. Because they had small, medium, large, and...
Micro.
It wasn't macro. It was uber large. So I don't know what they called it. But it was, I thought the micro. I don't know if I'm going to be called a micro.
But it's great. So when I went last year, I was impressed by the fact that you were in a room filled with people that... liked the companies they work for so much that not only did they vote them the best place to work, not just our company, but the whole room. And they're like, there's excitement in the room. And I thought, this is really, if ever, this is, you're like, I hope my son or daughter gets to work for a company like
well,
that.
Well, here's why I brought it up. Here's what I was thinking when I'm sitting there. So I've been a practicing advisor for almost 3 decades now, as you have as well, Pat. Hanson McLean's been over 25 years. And we've helped countless people, thousands of people, transition from work to retirement. Sometimes people, it's a hard transition for them because they've enjoyed their career, they love their job, it's hard for them to say bye to their coworkers. But there's not a week that goes by that we don't talk to somebody that hates their job and they come in and say, how much more do I have to stay here before I retire? Tell me as soon as I can retire.
How quick can I leave is oftentimes how they'll put it. How quick can I leave?
And they tell you all the reasons they can't stand their job, how they're overworked, how but nobody ever appreciates them, they can't stand their manager, and they'll just go. As I'm sitting in this luncheon, I'm thinking, I'm really pleased that our folks at Hanson McLean view this as a great place to work. Now, granted,
there's probably some people.
If someone won the lottery tomorrow, they might say, see you later, I'm retiring. But I get that. But
there might be a couple misguided employees at Hanson McLean that didn't vote us the best place to work.
No, but there's people. I thought about these other companies, great places to work. And I started thinking about some clients that over the years that came in, hated their job, say, how quickly can I retire? And we, through this conversation and the financial planning, we had some discussions. Maybe it's time, maybe instead of when being 52 and sucking it up for the last 8 years, maybe finding another career.
Something that you might like, so that 10 years or 12 years or 15 years meaningful work that you enjoy is better than retiring
and
early.
We've done, frankly, we've done a lot of planning where someone's come in and they're, you know, they had a high salary, whatever their salary was, and they took a career at a lower salary, but through the planning that we did with them, they were realized, they know they'd be okay. Maybe they'd work another year or two before retirement, but instead of hating their job between 50 and 60, they could do something meaningful and something they enjoyed between 52 and 65, maybe.
Yes.
And of course, every situation is different, but that's what I was thinking as I'm sitting in that room. I thought, these people who hate their job, why don't they go to work for one of these companies?
Yes.
And maybe because they couldn't afford to retire at 52. If they can't afford to retire at 52, why don't you find something you enjoy doing?
Just change your lifestyle maybe a little bit, or if you just reorganize yourself.
Well, part of it is through the planning. The right, yes. We found the right kind of planning enables people to understand what their options are. And understand the option, I think, is a key thing. Let's head back to the calls here. 1-888-2-HANSON is the number to be part of the program. 1-888-2-HANSON. We're talking with Michael. Michael, you're with Hanson McLean.
Yes, sir. I'm calling in regards to the reverse mortgages that are available nowadays.
Okay.
My wife and I are over 62. We own our own house, and we do not have any heirs to our estate whatsoever. So, we'd like to know something more about the reverse mortgages, please.
And Michael, you own nothing on your home, correct?
That's correct.
And how old are you?
I'm 63, turning 64 in March.
And how about your wife?
She's 61, 62 in June.
Okay. And tell me the value of your home approximately.
Approximately right now, it'll appraise out somewhere around $350,000-$400,000.
And do you need any income? Do you have enough to live comfortably on?
Are you still working? Are you retired? Or
we're actually disabled, both of us, so oh. We're on a very limited income.
Oh,
okay.
And this your disabilities. Do you think that will shorten a normal life expectancy? I know it's kind of a tough question to ask and to answer, but.
It should not. It's more mobility and disabling, injuries we suffered at work.
Okay. So let's talk about how the reverse mortgages work and when they make sense and when they don't make sense. And Pat and I are actually big fans of these products when it makes sense,
now,
right? Not for everybody.
And we don't sell reverse mortgages. At one point in time, Scott and I owned a reverse mortgage company. But we have subsequently, we sold it. We don't sell reverse mortgages. But I like them if used appropriately.
So we started a reverse mortgage company in the latter part of 2003. We looked because we said, for many Americans, this will be a necessary piece of their retirement income. For those that have a ton of savings at retirement, all kinds of money coming in, they don't need a reverse mortgage. Probably doesn't make sense for them. But for so many Americans that find themselves at retirement without a ton of other savings, without a pension, it's a necessity and a life changer. So we started a company, grew it to a couple hundred employees, a Fortune 500 company.
They were a Fortune 100 company at the time.
Acquired it from us.
Bought it from
and
us.
And it's now Liberty, reverse mortgage is still in existence. I think it's the largest in the country right now.
Yeah,
500
I think
employees
have,
or something like that.
Yeah, 500 or some odd
yeah,
employees.
We're very proud of it because we believe that these products, when appropriate, can make a tremendous difference.
Now, and like I said, we don't sell them. I'm not licensed to sell them. But I have recommended them twice in the last 3 months. In fact, I recommended it to someone last week. And I recommended it to someone that they didn't have any interest. One lady I recommended to last week, she had no heirs.
Like you.
And she didn't have quite enough income from her portfolio to live the lifestyle she wanted. She had a rental property. She owned a $650,000 home. And she was complaining to me she didn't have enough money to spend. So I said, do a reverse mortgage. So I'll walk you through on how it works.
What income do you have right now, Michael?
Well, I make on disability from Social Security approximately $1,200 a month, and my wife, through her school disability, she brings in somewhere around $1,800. So there's $3,000 a month there, and then we do have a couple of rental properties. One brings in kind of a negative situation. It's in Old Town Sacramento, actually, and it has a rent of about $1,300, but there is a mortgage on it, so we're kind of burning about $700 a month on that.
Okay.
Yes, it hurts. But we also have one rental piece property, which is $750 a month, and we own that property also.
So that's pretty clear. So you have one rental with a big mortgage on it, one rental with no mortgage at all.
Correct.
And then your home's no mortgage.
Correct.
You know, so here's how reverse mortgage works. Based on your age, they will lend you either as a lump sum amount or a series of payments, a dollar amount based upon your age and the value of your home. So you own a $350,000 home. As long as both of you are age 62, you'd probably be able to borrow about
half.
Maybe not quite half, but somewhere between a third and a half. And they would give it to you either as a lump sum or a stream of payments. Think of it, a reverse mortgage, just like a regular mortgage, where the interest is just added to the principal until the day you die. So, give you an example. You take $100,000, and that interest just grows and grows and grows, and the day you die, you owe $300,000 on the mortgage, but now the house is worth $600,000. Whoever inherits the property pays off, sells the property, pays off the mortgage, whatever's left, the equity goes on to your heirs or a charity or whatever you'd like. That's how it works. So they're no different than a regular mortgage, except the interest rate just adds on to it till the day you die. As long as you make you pay the property taxes and insurance, they cannot throw you out of the home. Right? That's the benefit of a reverse mortgage, is that it is your home. The equity in it is yours, and they cannot ask you to leave the home.
And essentially, you're borrowing the money, and rather than having to pay the interest as a normal mortgage, the interest accrues on itself. So as long as the home continues to appreciate in value some, you always have some equity. But that's really not your major concern. I think it could make some sense.
How much do you owe on that property in Old Town?
Okay. There's a mortgage of approximately $255,000 on that property in Old Town. It's a loft right across the street from the railroad museum. Uh-huh.
So here's what I would do. I would actually shop
how much, and what's that worth?
See, that's something I do not know. We bought it at a high end when they were making the loft in Old Town. And so I don't know with the current restructuring down in Old Town and around the area with the complex going in and all the revamping of downtown. I really don't know. I'm thinking it's probably in the area of $350,000, $400,000 probably right now.
Oh, okay, so you've got equity.
You've got equity in it. You just have negative cash flow.
Yes, sir. Exactly.
I kind of like the idea of a reverse mortgage.
I would do it.
On a monthly. I'd do a monthly.
Yeah, I would take monthly.
And let's assume.
And I would shop for it too, Scott. What I found.
Because if the home values go up 20 years from now, you can always refinance it again in the future. And when you're taking a monthly, our concern would be, at 62, if you took a lump sum, which you could, we've seen people do this, you take a lump sum out of that, it's kind of your last stop to the well. Once you're rated that, there's nothing else. So if you take a monthly, your first couple of years, your mortgage balance is going to be very small because it's just this monthly income. And it still would give you the flexibility at some time down in the future. You can still refinance that to a different kind of reverse mortgage, maybe either get more monthly or take a lump sum out.
And you want to shop for it. They do offer discounts. They're all government. Most of them are government guaranteed. There's a couple private ones out there. But you want to shop for them because they do offer discounts. Different firms offer discounts.
Okay.
Meet with someone who's qualified and go on over, what the options are. Decide what the product you want is, and then shop it.
Okay.
It's that easy. And it makes sense for you.
Really interesting.
They are interesting.
It made sense for you, especially since you have no heirs and you've got two other pieces of property, because the problem with doing them at age 62 is, like Scott said, it's your last trip to the well.
Yeah, and you're relatively young. I mean,
you're relatively young, but you do have other two other pieces of properties. The one I recommended this last week was for a 67-year-old single lady, and she had a rental property worth $400,000. And it made total sense for her. The other one I recommended a couple months ago was a married couple. They had a couple $100,000 in the bank, hadn't talked to their they were estranged from their children, and it made perfect sense for them. But oftentimes, it doesn't make sense. So
it's not always, yeah.
Yeah, especially if you're going to take one out and go and buy a motorhome or blow it. Like everything else, it is a tool, and tools can be used right or wrong.
Someone at their 62nd birthday did it. Their spouse was 55 or 56. Oh. They had their spouse get removed from title in order to do this, and I remember like pleading with them at the time, don't do this.
Yeah, that was not a good use of the reverse mortgage. So anyway, love the idea. Just do a little research. In fact, if you go online and type in reverse mortgage, there's all kinds of calculators right on the websites that will actually tell you how much money you should expect. Yeah. All righty?
Oh, great.
Good luck,
good
Michael.
Deal.
All right, appreciate the call.
Glad you called. Well, you know, Pat, I had there's some interesting planning techniques you could do around that. Here's an example of where someone I used in the last year or two.
A disclosure again. We don't sell reverse mortgages or mortgages.
Right.
I think we sound too enthusiastic about this reverse mortgage.
So this was a client.
And I don't want to mislead people into thinking that we're promoting these one way or the other.
I had a client, had been a client for probably 15 years. The wife had passed away, unfortunately. The man was left. His family was in the Bay Area. Couple kids in the Bay Area, no children here. He would drive to the Bay Area like every weekend to visit families. He was in 70 some odd years old. He had a house here in the Sacramento region that was paid for, and he had a fairly large size retirement account, and he had a military pension and some Social Security. He had plenty of income.
Financially, he was fine.
Yes, particularly here. His kids wanted him to move to the Bay Area. But he did not want to take out a mortgage. He says, I just do not feel comfortable leaving a house that's paid for and going to a house that's twice as expensive and having a mortgage payment, which I totally get. He says, I just don't want that. So we started exploring a reverse mortgage. What he ended up doing was selling his house here, using those dollars as the down payment on a house in the Bay Area, twice the cost, used a reverse mortgage to finance the remainder. So from a cash flow standpoint, he was in the exact same position as he was here. His retirement account was still fully intact. His income, the only thing that cost more is property tax, but he could afford the difference in property
and
tax.
And there was a cost associated with the reverse mortgage. But the day he dies, the equity, as long as the home grows at a higher rate than the cost of the money.
And actually, at this point, if he passed away today, his kids
are
probably better off doing this.
He was better off.
I mean, so there are some times when they really can make sense. I mean, I think a time like that where you get somebody who's living here, kids and grandkids in the Bay Area, kids and grandkids want them close by.
Achieved the objective?
It absolutely achieved the objective.
The kids didn't care how much they were going to inherit, I assume.
All things being equal, plan on your retirement of not using one.
Please.
Having a home that's paid for.
Please.
Having enough retirement assets set aside to be retirement, have your retirement income. That's your best thing.
But if you get to retirement or you retire in a situation which retirement was forced on you, and you're not able to retire comfortably, I would not discount a reverse mortgage.
No, definitely look at them.
And continuing with calls, 1-888-2-HANSEN. We're with Dave. Dave, you're with Hanson McLean Advisors.
Well, good afternoon. Appreciate you taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm kind of new to you guys. I just kind of started listening to your show and looking at your website, and I need some advice. I need some help.
Good. Well, glad you called. We'll do our best.
Well, I'm coming out of I came out of a medical bankruptcy, and it kind of depleted me, and I'm 67 years old. And I own my own house. I don't have any debt.
Okay.
I got about $50,000 in 401k in savings. And I've got $60,000 line of credit through a reverse mortgage.
Okay.
Now
you say,
I'm going
to, let me, quick question. You say you've got a $60,000 line of credit. Do you have other, in addition to that, is there a debt, a reverse mortgage debt on this property?
Well, there's a lien on the property, but that, that lien, I never have to pay it.
That's I'm just trying to understand. So you took out a reverse mortgage, you've used a good portion of it, and you have a line of credit of $60,000 left. Is that correct?
Yeah. My debt against that is like $40,000.
Okay.
Okay. And are you receiving a monthly distribution from the reverse mortgage, or is it just the line of credit that you have access to?
No, it's just a line of credit. Line of credit.
Okay.
And are you working now or no?
Yes, right now I'm working full-time, but I'm going to be going part-time here actually next week. So part of the reason for the part-time is my wife's pretty ill, so I want to spend some more time with her. And I'm getting burned out kind of on what I'm doing, but they're going to allow me to go part-time, which is going to work out.
So what's your question for us?
Well, I want to protect myself against inflation. My monthly expenses are very low. I'm going to hold out, trying to collect Social Security. I'm going to wait till I'm 69 so I can get as much of that as I can get. And then,
could you wait till 70?
I do have, possibly. It depends on my wife's health and how I'm doing.
And is your wife on Social Security now?
Yes, she is.
Got okay. It. Disability or regular?
Well, she was on disability, but they switched that over to regular as soon as she hit retirement age.
Okay.
All right.
So your
question for us is what?
I don't know anything about investing. And I want to be able to put this money where it's going to protect me as much as it can against inflation.
So Dave, there's two things that I would focus on. One is staying in the workforce as long as you possibly can and deferring Social Security as long as you possibly can.
Yeah. I'm glad you didn't say you want to start it right away.
All right.
And that'll increase with inflation. That's going to be your...
That is your source of income, and it has an inflation adjuster on it. Due to the fact that your home is paid for and that you are Medicare eligible, you have a big hedge for inflation already. I would not worry about inflation at this stage of the game.
Social Security is your biggest expense. You don't have to worry about because your home
is paid for.
Yeah.
Well, it has a reverse mortgage on it, but you're going to stay there till your dying day, presumably.
Correct.
Yep. So if the 401k was invested, you said you had 401k.
What about spousal Social Security? What can he sign up for that now? He's over 66. Well, he can put fast full retirement age.
He might be eligible.
Yeah, that was one of the questions I was going to ask because I've seen that where, we can bring up hers to be, equal to half of what mine is.
No. You defer your Social Security, you get half of her Social Security.
I don't know if he's eligible for that, Scott.
Well, they know they changed the rules.
They changed the rules. I don't know if he's eligible for that.
I did the webinar that explains it all. I just don't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, I would look into that. So look to see if you're, but I don't believe he is eligible for Social Security on the spousal benefit. I would look at it. He might be. I would look at that.
He was over. I think he was over that.
Oh, there was a window.
Yes, he's over that age.
Yeah, the window. So you want to look to see if you're available, if you can take the spousal. It depends on your age. Social Security today.
We actually have a great webinar, and I just don't remember off the top of my head.
And it's got the dates in it, too.
Yeah.
So go to our website and type in Social Security, and there's a webinar that actually has the dates. Other than that, I wouldn't invest these dollars. I wouldn't put any risk on these dollars whatsoever. If you had, out of the $50,000, if you had $10,000 or $20,000 in an S&P 500 fund or a total market fund and you thought you were not going to spend it for at least 7 to 10 years, I'd be okay with that.
Our concern is that the stage you're at, given your wife's health, let's say we took 20,000 of your 50,000 and invested it somewhere, and a year from now it was worth 18,000 or 14,000.
Right. How would you react to that?
Well, you know, I know that you know you're in it for the long term.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could weather that storm. You know, because this hedge that I'm trying to do is probably going to be more into my 70s.
Got it.
You know, late 70s, like.
Well,
that.
then take 20,000 of it
and buy the total market or the S&P 500 inside of your 401k or your IRA. And I'd be completely fine with that, and don't plan on spending
those
dollars.
It's all how you react to it.
Yeah, don't plan on spending those dollars for 7 to 10+ years. All righty.
All right. Yeah.
All right.
Poor,
the S&P 500.
Like a plan.
All right. And then go to our website, watch the webinar on the Social Security, and you may fall into that window where you're eligible for spousal benefit.
Yeah, get a spousal benefit rather than, and then if you can do that, then you could probably defer until 70.
70 and for your own.
Which would help you.
Appreciate the call.
All right.
All righty. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Dave. Glad you called. All right, Pat, we are almost out of time on this program.
But before we go, a number of times throughout the year, we'll do the 7 personal decision points for retirement transition. And we have those coming up here in the next week and a half.
This week is coming. So if you're about to retire in the next few years and you haven't attended one of these, we've had thousands of people attend them, by the way. They're very informative. And we think you should, I'm not going to tell you what you should or shouldn't do. We believe they're helpful in talking to people. We believe
you're not going to hurt yourself by going there.
Yeah. So in the Sacramento area, this coming week, on Tuesday, we are in Elk Grove. Wednesday, we're at Ranch Cordova. Thursday, Roseville. Saturday, Crocker Art Museum. In the evenings, on the midweek, they're at 7 p.m. On the Saturday, they're at 11:15. And in Colorado, Tuesday, we are in Boulder, Broomfield area. Wednesday, we are in Lakewood. Thursday, Cherry Creek. And Saturday, Denver Highlands. So, Highlands Ranch. So,
if you want more information regarding these, go to our website, HansonMcLean.com, and you can register right there. You can watch a little video about what you can expect to see there. You're going to get your book if they attend, Scott.
That's right. So it's really helpful, I think. We're not going to try to sell you anything. We are very low-key, just like our show is. The same kind of approach you'll find, and I think it'd be worth your time to attend one of these. So look forward to seeing you there. We're out of time. Enjoy the rest of your weekend and your week. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, a registered investment advisory firm. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor, tax consultant, or estate planning attorney to conduct your own due diligence.